I'm going to start and introduce Carolyn D. Cristofano, who owns Blue Heron STEM Education. Carolyn is a former science museum educator in the Boston area, and she uses story, particularly in multidisciplinary STEM fields, making programs that then engage STEM with, and has done some with, English, arts, and social studies. So I'll let her tell you some more about that. And our other speaker today is Ruth Ketchin, who is a former opera singer. She founded a youth chorale in Florida and started some music-related programs and started bringing in other disciplines to help integrate arts seamlessly with STEM fields, with her curriculum development. She also has a master's in curriculum development. So today I think our topic would be called Engaging Students in STEM Through the Arts, and I'm going to turn it over to Carolyn.
Well, hello. Thanks, Susan. So, Ruth, our project that we've been working on is called The Arts Effect, and, you know, I think we're both coming from very different places, but arriving in a very similar space around this idea that it seems critical to us and at least interesting to us to explore how the arts can impact how children learn and engage in the various STEM fields. And so, you know, I know we're calling our project The Arts Effect, and I'm wondering if you want to just synopsize and talk a little bit about where you're at right now. You've been involved in this for a little while, but where you're at personally in terms of what you think The Arts Effect can be.
Well, I've evolved quite a bit in the past few years doing this, or having been asked to do STEAM. First, having been asked to do arts integrated curriculum, which then I became familiar with the acronym STEAM and turned it into more STEAM. And as I did that, and received a lot of questions and attentions, and I've written a few articles about it as well, as what is STEAM really? And there's a lot of disagreement about that. So, Carolyn, we came together from mutual acquaintances or business contacts that we were having this discussion. What is STEAM? How do we define it? So how do we do it? Because obviously you can't do it if you don't know what it is. My take on it, which has sometimes received a lot of pushback, is that STEM is at the core of STEAM, and it is. In the arts, we depict the arts as a small a rather than a big, bright purple A, because I think the idea is that we want the arts to seamlessly be integrated into STEM learning to help certain students understand through experience, maybe engage students who wouldn't be engaged otherwise, and also expand the possibilities of using both right and left brain thinking to enhance creativity while they're trying to solve problems. Mm-hmm. I think the arts have a way of enabling us to do something, try something, that take a risk at something and maybe be successful or not be successful, but gain confidence from taking that risk, and as a result, try something harder, or not be afraid to try something hard, or not to be afraid of trying something that sounded unappealing, such as to some young people, math and science don't seem to appeal. So if you show them that there's math and science in everything that they do every day, that could be a way of attracting them. I think it's very important not only to make kids aware of STEM for STEM professions, is my thought is to make STEM literate citizens, because you really need to be able to think and operate on these levels in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And so that's where my thinking has now evolved, that STEM is at the core. It's not arts integrated, although some of the lessons can be arts integrated, but it's really STEM using the walls opened up a bit to either enhance creativity with arts activities, such as pantomime and poetry writing or reading or those kinds of things, or actually making something and expanding on the ability to design and envision things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that an important part of what we've talked about in terms of the idea of what STEM is that there's room certainly in the field for all sorts of different definitions of STEAM, and I think we're just choosing one to go on because of our interest in the effect that the arts and rigorous arts experiences can have on the learning and engagement of kids in STEM. And what I see is some parallels between what you're bringing to this conversation in terms of your vision for the arts, and kind of putting form around what I saw as more intuition around the possible impacts of the arts in STEM. And what we saw when we started to introduce engineering into science and math, that is, when you ask students to be creative in an open-ended way, and they sense that there are multiple answers, and they have the chance to work with materials and act on their own creativity, that empowers them in a way that really helps them connect the information that they're learning about science and math and technology, as well as their skills. So it's very exciting. But in addition, one of the really interesting points that I think you've brought up over and over again is sort of what I'm starting to see is one of the defining differences between a highly effective arts experience and a highly effective engineering experience. And I think it comes down to who's in charge of what the criteria are. Because in engineering, engineers may define the performance criteria, but in the end, they know that their design has to work somehow to solve a problem. And they may decide whether something's got to flow at 5 milliliters per second or 2 milliliters per second. But in the end, if the design isn't doing what it was set out to solving the problem that it was set out to solve, you kind of have this external check on how you're doing. Whereas you've talked about the arts and you kind of set your own criteria for success. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
I think that's the big defining difference. And I think in doing some of these STEAM lessons, I've usually had two different types of protocols. One where form must follow function. So whatever it is that you're trying to do has to work. And also exploring what I call a fantasy route. In other words, let your fantasy go and say, what would you do if you could?
Mm-hmm.
And does that work? And then how do you take that and take the best parts of it and make it work? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that you hit on that I think really defines what we're trying to do. The other thing is, in all of this time, having been a performing artist, where I felt there was a method to my madness, and you know, more maybe than some people. I think some people do the arts in every different way. I think the biggest difference is that in the arts, the criticism or the function of something is really an opinion. It's like, do you like this? If I look at a painting, let's say I look at a Picasso painting, and what I see is what I see, and maybe I really like it, and maybe I really don't. And it depends. But in a functional engineered machine, let's say, it's nice if it's beautiful, and Apple has proved that quite well. But the important thing is people won't buy it if it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but art, how does art work? Do you go to a performance and you love so-and-so's voice, or you love this orchestra, or a certain museum? It's really cultivating that in a person.
I'm gonna stop a minute and ask a question. I'm Susan Erickson, a geologist, but I think in music too. I mean, if I go to a symphony and they can't play, then that's like engineering. It doesn't work.
Well, that's right. But then what are your criteria to judge that? Do you like it if they play out of tune? Do you want to hear it if they don't sound like they're playing together? If a particular conductor takes a certain piece of music so slow that it doesn't do it for you?
Well, I'm thinking of ads comparing computers. You know, is it because you want the top to come off? I'm always looking for similarities in art and science, too. I'm thinking what you're saying is some say, well, I can do this. My product does that, too. You're judging from your own aesthetics
and your own needs.
Yes. What are the needs?
I mean,
but that, I'm going to jump in, too, though, and say that that's a consumer perspective, whereas when we put children in the role of engineer, they must think about a consumer and some of the design challenges that they're given, but they are the engineer who's saying whether or not this product is going to be successful because it has X, Y, or Z component. I've been challenged to make this design work with X and Y and Z, if possible.
Yes, they have a final product to work toward, but that engineer had to have made that decision too, that I want a computer that is only this fast. Anyway, maybe that's off the subject.
No, I think you're right. No, I think it's right on. I mean, I think that's one of those places where if you try to define things too rigidly, you kind of get yourself caught in a box. And the irony is that in STEAM education, we're constantly going into these analyses and then trying to get out of them and going in and out, because either way, you risk either oversimplifying or putting things back into silos, which is what I think nobody in STEAM or STEM education really wants to do.
That's absolutely right. I think that both things are true. When you're making something, it has to work. And to some degree, how well it works is a function of who's using it. You know, just as an orchestra is, if they please you with what they do. And you know, there's some people who like anything. And there's some people who don't like anything. So, and that goes for all things. I'm sure that that there are people who walk into the Apple store and are not taken with the incredible nature of all their products. I'm not one of them, but I'm sure there are. And it's the same with music or art. You know, people go to a museum, and I think the arts have developed in such a different way now because of all the technology that we have and all the ability we have to media that we have to do things. Music that's live, music that's not live, so music that's not live can be corrected, just like an engineered product. And it is an engineered product. Every recording of music has been engineered. So there is an overlap there, and it doesn't still mean that I do or don't like a particular version of it. Maybe one of the things I don't like is because it's been engineered to be too perfect, so it loses its humanity.
So in the project that you're doing now, do you talk about any of that with the students, or do they have I heard from Carolyn that very clear-cut goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do in this fantasy route that I take. I always am clear to define perhaps how the reflective piece. How do you judge what you've done? How do you judge your own work? How do you self-assess it? In a performance of any kind, whether it's an arts performance or if you've designed and built something, I think you have to assess your work. So that's where I think that component comes in.
And I think, Ruth, too, the other day we kind of touched upon this, that you know, there's this developmental progression that I think we're still exploring in the engineering field. And obviously, although I am a science educator first, I've really embraced the engineering education point of view recently. So I kind of need to put forth that that's my filter at the moment. And I have to sometimes remind myself to pull back. But in any case, ultimately, I would like to see a world where we actually have students in more open-ended ways than they even are now, being able to identify a problem and then decide for themselves what the criteria for successfully solving that problem would be, because that more clearly connects to the real world than somebody coming in. Although, I mean, I know there are clients and all that who will say, you know, we need something, a car that can go this fast or whatever. But, you know, to really get that full empowerment of the child, I think, either in arts or engineering, and then by extension with science inquiry. You know, we had this discussion all through the 90s in Massachusetts about how much do you give over to the student and allow them to define what the question of the day in science was going to be, or the question of the semester, and how much is it driven by our sense of what's important.
Well, that's right. I think that's very hard, and so a lot of the engineering lessons have constraints, which are real world, and I think that's important. In the arts, sometimes they're also, we give constraints. I mean, after all, whatever artwork you're doing, someone has to want to see it, buy it, listen to it, whatever it is. So those are things kind of that I mix in with this fantasy thing that I keep talking about, you know, and trying to do something. And maybe realizing, here's my fantasy idea, and if I could build and design anything, this is what it would be. And then looking at that and saying, you know, it won't work because of this, this, and this. I mean, if you have kids building a base station on the moon, we really can't do that yet. So I've done that. We've done that, and we've explored that in a multitude of ways, bringing in a lot of science and math and technology concepts that it takes to do all of that, including the fantasy piece. But in the bottom line, they have to realize what would your constraints mean, and maybe if you could, this is what you would do.
Ruth, I'm going to interrupt because we've gone to our time, so I think that's the fantasy idea is a great place to stop. So these are short podcasts. I think we've got at least 4 or 5 topics we could describe on another series of podcasts. But to find out more about Ruth's and Carolyn's work and their projects, you can visit creativedisturbance.org.